It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 583 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I talk with Jeff Haas from The End of All Terminus. Jeff has a Kickstarter project underway for Terminus that will end this week, so be sure to support it after listening to this fun interview. It's described this way. It's an apocalyptic science fiction epic about the last seven species in the universe aboard the spaceship Terminus. We discuss how this book came to be, who the characters from the different species are, and what we will see from him in the future. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Jeff Haas, the creator of such good things as, let's see here, the graphic novel Sanctus from Arcana Publishing, Malik the Reigning Devil from 123 Go, and the completed Nightmare Patrol series, which is a four-issue series available through Comixology. And Jeff also is the owner of the Traversing the Stars podcast and a publicist for indie comic creators. So how you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me.
It's good to talk with you. You and I have been interacting when it comes to like setting up interviews, stuff like that for people that you represent and things. So I've enjoyed doing that. But now we actually get to talk. So this is
indeed
our chance to do this kind of stuff. And the reason we're talking right now in particular is there's a Kickstarter going on right now for The End of All Terminus, which
yes.
is when, and people get on me because I don't do this soon enough, so I'm trying to do it as soon as I can. This project will be funded if it reaches its goal by Thursday, April 13 at 8:03 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Now, as we're talking, and we're talking a little early, you are on the verge of getting your goal. I imagine by the time this hits the podcast, the waves, that you will have got that and into wonderful stretch goals and good things like that.
I would seriously hope so. Right now, as of the recording, I'm at $135 away. So if this takes a week to get there, I'd be very disappointed.
Well, you know what? Kickstarter is a different animal for everybody.
That's
some people get it right away. I mean, the moment it's out there, poof, they've got they reach their goal. And sometimes it's lofty goals. One guy I was supporting, he wanted $20,000. And by the time the thing was over, he had just cracked $100,000.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, he said he passed out when he saw how much he had actually raised with it. So that was a good thing. Now, unfortunately, he's a unique case. That's not the way that everybody does it. So, well, let me read a quick thing. You've got a description of The End of All Terminus on the Kickstarter page, and let me read it because I think it's really good for people to understand what the story's about. It says, The End of All Terminus is an epic apocalyptic science fiction series about the last seven species in the universe. The universe is being torn asunder by the Big Rip, and the survivors aboard the Terminus seek to escape by crossing the boundaries of the universe to whatever exists beyond it. These seven species vie for control of the differing cultures and perspectives as the differing cultures and perspectives clash. This multi-layered series is equal parts action-adventure and highbrow philosophy and allegory. Very, very Trek of you to go that route. Just because I'm a big Trek guy, so that works for me. So tell me, of course, I'll ask about who the seven species are and stuff like that. But where did the idea of the story come from?
I don't know. Sometimes you know exactly where something came from, and sometimes, I mean, especially for the life of a writer, sometimes you know, and sometimes you can point to it, and sometimes it just pops in your brain, and you start playing with it a little bit, and then it starts developing into a full-fledged idea. Some stories like Nightmare Patrol, I know where it came from. I actively thought about it and created it. Terminus kind of just happened, where I'm not even sure which part of the idea came first of it either. But when I caught the whiff of the concept, I kept playing with it and seeing what the potential of it was. And then it kept building and it kept getting more interesting to the point where what I was working on at the time, I had another short story I was going to work on. It was going to be a one issue story, a ghost story. I got, I think, 10 pages into writing it. Then this one kept pounding away at my brain, and I dumped the other one. I was like, I'll get to it one day in the future. Maybe this is my story. And okay. Terminus has dominated for the most part ever since.
Okay. How long ago was that when you got to that point?
Maybe a year and a half ago.
Okay. So I have to tell you, one of the most productive times for writers and creators was during the pandemic, when you were basically, it was just you and your creations for a lot of the time. Did the pandemic kind of help you with all this? Since you were suddenly now at a place where you had quote unquote time and the availability to do that, did that help you as far as creating Terminus?
No, I think that was a separate situation because as a high school teacher, I was teaching remotely. So my days were still being absorbed by a lot of school stuff, even though I didn't have the commute anymore, but other things kind of used up that time. So I was teaching for the most part, so I didn't have that excess free time throughout the day, though it would have been nice. but I was trying to teach through Zoom, and that had its own distractions.
Yeah, I have suddenly turned into a work-from-home person myself. And it used to be I drove all over the place, but now I live in Florida, and I do work for people in Maryland, and I do people for other places in Florida and stuff like that. And it's really interesting how different it makes it, because you can never get away from work. You know, your phone, your computer, everything says work, work, work. So
I will agree with that. Now that I do publicist work, the podcast, the comic book, multiple comic books, I will say, yeah, I am in some sort of stage of work at any given point in my day for the most part.
I always compared it to being like, I don't know if you've ever seen the people who juggle plates on these sticks.
Oh, yeah.
And the plate starts to wobble, and he's got to run over and spin the plate faster. And that's the way my life is. I'm endlessly looking for something to start wobbling, and then I got to run over and spin the plate a little faster to get done. So that's what my life has become.
Yes.
So let's get into the story. Talk about how many pages this is. Is this like a mini series? Is this a graphic novel? Tell us about that.
It's a long form mini series, if that makes sense. It's a finite story. I know the ending. The ending is pretty much written. Definitely plotted out completely. But it's longer than a miniseries, but it's not indefinitely ongoing. I'll call it a long form miniseries in the sense of, I'm trying to think of a good example. Why the Last Man? Long form, finite, ongoing, sort of.
Okay. You don't know how many pages now at this point.
Not necessarily. I mean, I know how much the first issue is, and yeah, you know, the second issue has been written and so forth. But a lot of it's going to have to do with the series itself. Hopefully it's well-loved, and I can write everything I want to write, and it goes on until it wraps up naturally. Or it could end up being wrapped up a lot sooner and I just have to edit out a lot of the side stories and whatnot. But for the most part, I don't have a definite issue count.
Okay, because, of course, the name of it is The End of All, which makes me think that the last panel is going to be this black panel with nothing in it, and everything's going to be done by then. I've seen that before, and Deep Space Nine did that when they were on the station, and they pulled back from the station the very last thing, and we saw the Starscape, and we saw nothing else but that, and I thought that was a great way to do it, but you're not going to do that with this, are you?
I will say that the ending, I have not seen something that ends like this.
Oh, that's good. Because that's one thing that drives me crazy when I see the same ending. I saw that one coming. So I will look forward to an ending that I haven't seen before. That'll be good.
Maybe after the interview, I'll share how it actually ends, and you can let me know what you think.
Okay. I never, even though the website I work for is major spoilers, I try desperately not to spoil stuff. I don't mind hinting. I don't mind teasing. But I do not want to spoil the ending so that people say, oh, I don't have to buy that book now. Nope, not doing it.
Well, like I said, I don't think I've seen something end like this before. It's sort of a more highbrow, philosophical ending, which I can't give anything away about. But like I said, I don't think I've seen something quite like this, which is one of the reasons I'm writing it. I think it's a very interesting way to the visuals alone are going to be quite interesting, I think.
Okay, now you've opened the door. We can talk about the artist. I get a kick that the artist's last name is Ship.
That is true.
In a book about a ship.
Indeed.
Enough. So it worked out, you know, very nicely for that. So so let's talk about how did you come, you and B.A. Ship get together to do this book?
Basically, I found him through random searching online. I will say this, that I was not actually looking for an artist at the time. I, for different reasons, especially financial, I was planning on, I didn't necessarily know I was going to move forward on Terminus for, like I said, financial reasons, other reasons as well. But I was going through different websites, and I think I was working on one of my publicist gigs. So I was going through the 50 or 60 groups I tend to post to, and I kept seeing his art. And I kind of just kind of remembered it, and I friended him, I think, on it, and I just kind of kept it in my brain. And I kept seeing it. And I decided, I'm just curious what it costs to have him, you know, work on a page for me. You know, black and white. I figured, what the hell? Mm-hmm. And I talked to him, and he was extremely reasonable. Actually, it was more reasonable than I thought it should be. But you didn't hear me say that, so he can't raise his prices now. Just kidding. But I was like, well, if that's what he's doing it for, I can do this. And I moved forward. If he, you know, wasn't so willing to work with me on that, I probably couldn't have gone forward. But after that, I was like, oh, I thought about it. I was like, that's affordable. That's 100% affordable. There's profit potential there that I can keep working on this series. And for anyone who's listening, profit is important, or you're not going to have a second issue. I decided to run with it, and it happened from there.
Okay, now, real quick, we'll go back and say that the amount of the goal is $1,200, and you're like you said, you're very close to it. So that's very good. And of course, like most Kickstarters, most of that money is likely going to go to paying for the artist. And you're making print copies? I think I ordered the digital version.
I'm not sure which you did on there. As far as the where how things go, pretty much almost all of it is going to the artist, as you said. These things tend to roll. At the end of the day, I'm not going to have any of it for myself. It's all for production, and then the second half is for the printing. There's going to be four different variant covers. Physical copy. There's the Brad Ship cover. There's going to be the Chris Michael Crit crossover cover. There's going to be the Dennis Valencia cover that's already been done. And then there's a secret fourth cover that will be revealed, hopefully within the next few days, that is going to be a painted cover.
Now, here's something interesting. One of the levels, we'll get to the story. I won't forget that. But one of the levels, the $40 levels, is, and I've never seen this before, you get to appear on your podcast.
That is true.
You get to pay to be on your podcast. I've never seen that before. I have to start doing that. Is what I'm gonna have to
I usually, I mean, there are some podcasts that do charge. I tend not to charge for mine, but at the same time, I will decide who I'm going to have on my show or not. But for $40, you come on and you're basically going to demand a spot on the show. And as long as whatever you're promoting is considered appropriate, you have your spot. It's guaranteed. Other than that, there's no such thing as a guaranteed spot on my show, even though if you're not, you know, actually paying for it at that point.
Okay, I got to ask this and then we'll get to the book. What was it like to interview Todd Stashwick from Picard?
That guy is awesome. He's as close to being Shaw as you think he would be. You know, I mean, he's funny. He's, you know, kind of this kind of a little on the sarcastic side, but you like the guy. He's immensely likable, a little intimidating, just a bit.
And why? What was he intimidating? What was intimidating about him?
It's hard to necessarily put in the word, but other than the fact, one, that he's a someone who was a fan to begin with, but also you get the feeling that he doesn't. He's going to put you in your place if you say something stupid.
Oh, really? Okay.
You get the sense of it. I mean, not in a way that he's mean or anything, but in the sense that he is not going to screw around. You know, like you ask, you know, you just get that sense about him that he's not going to take idiots lightly. So you got to, you know, you got to bring your A game with him. But like I said, he's a super nice guy. I enjoyed the hell of that conversation. I cut it short because I was afraid that he had other things to schedule, and I actually interviewed him at work, so I was limited on time as well there. But it's one of my more favorite interviews that I've done.
Was the character built around who he is? Is that what's going on?
From when I talk about, you know, when I talk to actors, it's hard to separate 100% the actor from the character. There's always gonna be some of it that crosses over, and I will say there's a little bit of a through line there that is similar. I mean, there's a little crossover there, just a little bit. But you can see when you talk to him where Shaw gets some little bit of his personality out of.
Okay, because sometimes they do that. I mean, they're trying to remember the name of the show where the writers actually sat and watched the actors interact with each other when they were not playing the roles. And they literally built the cast around how these interactions went. And I thought that was a really interesting way to, of course, they loved that. They just basically got to be themselves. And so that was kind of, and I wonder with him about that, of course, and how all the rumors, of course, you know, we got Strange New Worlds out of the reaction to Pike and the crew. And now they're all saying that Stashwick should get his own show as well.
I did ask him that on the show, if that was the thing. He pretty much assured me that that's way above his pay grade. And it's one of those things. It's probably something that, in my head too, I would love to see it. But at the same time, the dynamics that do exist on the ship between Seven of Nine and Shaw probably may not translate well. And Shaw himself might not translate well to an every week episode. Shaw as a character is not someone who is very big into taking chances. He's not very big into the whole adventure thing. He, you know, he follows his rules. He does what he has to do. That might get very tiresome every week, coming with a new excuse for him to, you know, go against whatever regulation he has or go beyond the regulation and do something. So it may not translate as well as we think it does. It may just work because of the length of the show, the nature of the show, and that they're B characters and they're not the A group.
Okay. So, well, you know, characters grow and change, and he might, you know, evolve, as they like to say, as things go along. But all I can do is remember when that 1 minute long thing where the crew from Strange New Worlds came out and said that the fans had been heard and they were going to make Strange New Worlds. And I remember just like I jumped up and down and danced because I really like the guy who played Pike. But anyway, enough Star Trek. Let's get back to your work here. Let's talk about, because there's seven different alien groups. And of course, I say alien. Everybody in here is an alien, basically. And of course, I know one of them. I can tell right away, because there's humans involved. And there's a woman who's the president. And she's kind of trying to ride her on all these cats. And sometimes that's literal. Trying to keep everybody in tow so that everybody can survive. Talk about who the president is and who the humans are, if you would. Let's start there.
All right. Well, the humans are the dominant, not say dominant, let's say the majority of the individuals on the ship who are actually controlling the ship as far as the crew are human. They are they're the primary members of the crew, primary members of the security staff. And like I said, at the moment, with President Lamar, they're the dominant in the leadership role. There's reasons for that. Most of the ship, the Terminus, was built on Earth with the help of some of these other aliens and their technology, but the ship itself was built on Earth. It was the center point for this current iteration of this mission. President Lamar is in charge. There's a reason why she's in charge. There's a reason why she is a younger female as well. She was put into power or given the role of president because the other aliens did not, on some level, respect her because she was a younger human female person. The idea being that each individual, as the leader of the ship who became president, was a consensus vote. All the aliens had to agree about who was going to be put in charge. They elected her. Why? Because they felt, each one felt that she was, because of her youth, because of being a female, considered weaker, was easiest to manipulate, potentially intimidate, to control, to control on some level and get themselves in charge, even because they knew they weren't, themselves wouldn't get put in the leadership position. So she's there, not because people consider her the best leader, but because they think they can get away with the most from her, or they can scare her into doing what they want. Now, President Lamar is no idiot. She's extremely well qualified and smart. She does have a lot of strength. She does have skills of that nature as well. And the first couple of issues is going to be her determining to take control of the situation herself, to not let herself get pushed around by these other groups, and to take control of her position as leader. And that's kind of going to be part of her character arc, is building herself into that role of being a leader, realizing that she deserves to be there, even though the people may have voted in not necessarily for the best reason, she still belongs in that role. So that's kind of her arc. And it's, like I said, and it's the other characters, will part of their arc is going to be as well, realizing that and how they interact with her on that level. Thraxis, when the warrior races, does not respect her whatsoever. He's a male from a male-dominated hunter species of warriors. He thinks he can intimidate her. He kind of does in the first issue. It's going to have to, the relationship has to change as they move forward and things of that nature. The acolytes of DeVoe don't respect her because she's female, very religious-dominated society, very patriarchal. They don't respect her for that reason. Males are going, or in many religious organizations, the dominant group, they don't respect her in that way. Once again, that dynamic is going to have to change as she grows into her own in this series.
Okay, so that's you mentioned the warrior race. Is that the one that looks sort of animalistic on the pages? Okay.
Yeah, that's when they have kind of a cat-like appearance to them.
Yeah, and then the other one has got the great big hat on.
I was calling them the Space Catholics. They're definitely a rift on a religious-based organization.
Okay, and there's two of them. We call each other Alpha and Beta. One's Alpha and one's Beta. Which group is that?
They're the Zrakians. They are a clone species. They are a species that is all 100% identical. They view themselves as genetically perfect due to that genetic similarity. Alpha is the one in charge. He's technically slightly older, and Beta is obviously, like I said, the backup. He's the redundancy. If anything happens to Alpha, Beta is the one that they use genetics from to repopulate that species. But like I said, they're 100% genetically similar. And they, because of that similarity, they think they're self-superior. They think that they are the ones who should survive because they're the ones who reach genetic superiority. But like I said, they don't like each other very much. There's some egos there. Much like most people, most of us probably would not like each other, like ourselves, if we met ourselves as a separate individual. You know, if you could split into two and hang around each other, you probably couldn't stand each other that way. It's sort of the same thing with Alpha and Beta. They do not get along.
Because they're very... very simple in their appearance as far as it goes. They don't seem to wear clothes. They are plain, I guess, in their appearance.
They're very plain. They don't wear clothes, but at the same time, they don't have private parts. They don't have genitals. They don't need it. They're clones. They literally manufacture the next population. The goal is when they reach the new world, if the world they think they're going to reach, or the new universe, or whatever, they will engineer the rest of the population and build their civilization basically from Petri dish. That's their goal. That's why they're around. And let's say that's the thought process behind all for them, is that those two are the representatives. When they get to whatever the goal is, they will repopulate the planet with their kind that way.
Okay, you brought up an interesting point. Do all of them, these are just the representatives that we're seeing in the meetings, right? They have other people with them so they can repopulate when they get to where they're going? Is that the case?
Yeah, I mean, there's, like I said, a lot of humans. Thraxus has a group of his own. The Acolytes of Devoe is a pretty large group as well. The Link is, like I said, every group has multiple individuals in that group. But we're only seeing, in the first issue, we only see the representative for the most part. Towards the end of the first issue, you start seeing some of the other characters that come out. The comic book series has a chance, potential to be, have a very large cast. But I will say that by the end, the number I gave was like, there's about 250,000 people on the ship. Or people, individuals, living sentients on the ship, 250,000. By the end of the comic book, there's probably going to be 10 to 12.
Ooh. Okay, so we're going to lose a lot of people.
There's the death starts at the end of the first issue and will continue throughout.
Wow. Okay, so, all right, so by my count, that's four. There's another one in the first issue. It's a computerish.
Yep.
One. It says nourishment is not a concern to our kind. Who are those people?
That's the Link. The Link is a species of sentient machine. Machines, they're all different in appearance, but they share a common thought. They share, you know, they kind of like almost like a hive mind for the most part. And like I said, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not 100% original. I mean, you can look at the Borg and it's like, hey, the Borg, Skynet, whatever you want to call them. You know, there's a similarity there. There's a hive mind there. But because they're not subject to starvation, physical weakness, disease, and that nature, they view themselves as being the most important race to survive as well. They're using the other races because they need them at the moment, but they do believe themselves being machines and, like I said, not having those weaknesses as being superior and the ones who are meant to survive.
Okay. So then there's another one. There's a, they call him the tree.
The Lorelians. Yes. The Lorelians are sort of like space ants, as if you want to go that route, though they don't have that size of the ants, but they're kind of like space ants. They're a very wise species of plant, a living sentient plant. They're more patient, because they do live longer. Their perspective is also a lot longer than some of the other species of individuals, because I think with time and life comes wisdom, so they're a little wiser, a little more patient. Salah, the leader of the Lorelians, does have a good relationship with President Lamar. He's almost a mentorish individual for her, for various reasons. But for the most part, they are the closest to being friends, a friendly species to the humans.
Okay, all right. Six. So that's six. Who's the seventh?
The Paragon are the seventh species. They are seemingly a very passive race, a very, let's say, mousy. They're not very assertive in any way, shape, or form that we know of. Anything more than that, I'm not going to say.
Okay, because do we see them in the? You sent me like a 10-page preview. Are they in there, or we don't see them there?
They're not. I don't believe they appear. They don't have any lines. They don't talk much, so I don't believe they have any lines. So whether or not they're in the background or not, I can't remember if they're in the background of the scene. But they don't have any dialogue whatsoever.
Because the five groups kind of stare down the president at one point, and I can count the five of them when we talked about it, and I see her. So the other one we might not see. Of course, that's always be careful of the people who sit in the shadows.
That's right. There's a reason they're there. That's all I'm going to say. There's a reason they're there, and there's a reason why they feel this is important, and a reason why they don't make themselves, well, let's face it, we tend to not pay attention to those that just do what they're supposed to do and don't bother anybody, right? We tend to ignore them.
Right.
You got to be careful about that shit.
When I used to play Risk, which is like a world domination.
Oh, I love Risk, yep.
We used to play, and my only thing was to watch the people who didn't talk much. Because they would very quietly build up, and the rest of us were all arguing with each other and fighting with each other. And I look over, and there's that person very quietly. He's got the whole of Asia over there. And yep. I said, oh, no. I said, we can't let that person take. If we don't go after that person right now, he's going to wipe out the rest of us.
The best way to always play Risk is you take over Australia, then you quietly sit at the, I can't remember where, I think it's near India. It's that one little crossover between Australia and into Asia, and mm-hmm. you sit there and you build. And then you just quietly get there, and before people know what's happening, the game's already been over.
Okay, because that reminds me a little of what you're doing here.
I can't give anything away. No, I might have sort of right there. It's the I can't remember exactly where the name came anymore because it's been a while. But if I remember correctly, the secret's in the name. If I can remember where the hell I got it from. What a lot of these names come from is from other cultures, other words, especially Latin. And I kind of just fidget a little bit with the names, and they become what they are. But most of the names of these individuals mean something. Like Laurelians, the laurel. You know, it's I'm not that original. You know, I guess I'm from something, and then I kind of like tweak it. There's a reason they're in the story, and a role that they have, and it's also because of everything in the story is kind of looking at these different groups and what they are essentially, and kind of trying to figure out how does that survive in a dangerous situation.
Mm-hmm.
And from a different, and they're all different perspectives and how they do, like the warrior race, like I said, the Link, all this other stuff, the clone species, and stuff like that. The Paragon is there as well. And they're also, they're also representing an idea and how well would that approach survive. And yeah, so without giving too much away, they're just not throwaway species. There's something to them.
Are you going to maybe, when you get somewhere down the pike after you've introduced all of them, have like a page that shows what all the different races are and what we know about them? Are you going to do something like that?
I mean, I totally could. I mean, at the moment, I'm focusing on the first issue. Mm-hmm. Second issue, you know, is written. At some point, I could add that in there. Hopefully, people love the comic book enough. They're coming around with Ryan. They remember from issue to issue. But yeah, I mean, I could always do that in the inside front cover as we go along in. You know, but at the same time, but what I really liked was, what's the name of it? There was a comic book, Transformers comic book. Can't remember which one it was, but it's the one where, it was IDW, the one when, Hot Rod Rodimus was, on the ship and Whirl was there. And there was like this, it was like looking for the spark, whatever. They're all the ship together. Mm-hmm. And at the beginning of every issue, when this cast got big enough, they would have a roll call and they would show all the characters who were going to show up in that issue and kind of like a small snippet about them. I could see that happening at some point as the cast gets larger and larger. And yeah, on some level, the cast is going to be shrinking, but as the ship loses individuals, different characters do show up. They do have important moments of dialogue, you know, important scenes and roles that they play as, you know, things play out. And the characters will be introduced. There'll be some of them will be killed. Some of them will last, and some of the 10 to 12 I say will survive. Is in flux. You know, it could be any number of these other characters may be interesting enough that they keep rolling, or they may be more interesting than that. So I kill them off just to piss somebody off. I don't know. That's something I could definitely consider.
So you're saying that not all the seven races are sure to survive. They're not all going to survive.
I will guarantee that some of these races will not make it to the end.
Okay. So that's always good. Now I do see something Trek in all of these. And one of the things I always enjoyed about Star Trek was that the aliens always had like an aspect of humanity in them. The Ferengi or the greed and different ones are all different things that, is that how you picked the different races in Terminus? Was that to kind of represent humanity as if we were, you know, our different aspects were debating amongst ourselves how to survive?
Yeah, there's definitely an aspect to that. I mean, to go direct Star Trek, I mean, the Thraxis race, the Gedadakians, are Klingons. I mean, they just, I mean, it's close as, they're not an exact ripoff, obviously, but if I'd be lying if I said there was inspiration from the Klingons and how they act and talk and some of their philosophy. It's not, you know, it's there. Star Trek has done so many great things that it's almost impossible to do sci-fi and not, you know, pay homage to some of what they're doing, you know?
Right.
But
ship. The ship and everything, all these things are very Star Trek. But you know what? That wasn't unique to Star Trek. I mean, there were ships and aliens and different races and stuff all before Star Trek. So I always get a kick when people say, we're just ripping off Star Trek. Well, Star Trek, you know, shall we say, provided homages to other science fiction that came before it.
Oh, so. Definitely. I mean, Star Trek borrowed from Buck Rogers, most certainly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, a lot of the story itself is a debate. Without, I mean, I'm not going to say we're not literally sitting there having a debate, but it's a dialogue between me and the reader. Mm-hmm. Here's some concepts. Here's some rough generalizations about certain ideas and individuals. You know, how would this work out? How would they interact? What would survival be like for this or that group? Like Sigat said, Thraxis is very much, and his race, a very much a dominant, fighting, warrior, alpha male type race. How would they survive? Acolytes of DeVoe, once again, they're a fundamentalist group. 100% fundamentalist group. How would they see the situation? How would they survive? You know, a Link is, once again, very logical, but it's also just the sense of the lack of individual. They're a collective society. So, I mean, it's a lot of ways to look at it and say, I took some generalizations and decided to have them debate each other, but not directly debate. It's more like, who survives is the debate. You know, who makes it through is the conversation.
Mm-hmm. As it were. That's very science fiction, let me tell you, right? If anybody who's ever read science fiction, this is in its purest form science fiction. There's underlying concepts going on and there's discussion happening. And boy, if you ever watch Star Trek, that's so very true. But and that's a lot of what's happening here. And I'm just sort of curious. I need to clarify something just for my own understanding. Is all life gone now except what's on the Terminus?
The ship is made out of what is understood to be the last sentient species in the universe, the last seven. I will say, as I say that, in the first issue, they land on another planet for reasons, as you know, in the first seven pages, they want search for food, resources, supplies. And there's another species that's on those planets as well. One that is a seemingly sentient, but at the same time, they're not going to ever be part of the ship because they're also horribly hostile, nihilist species. But for the ship itself, they were the last seven species that they understood. Throughout, would they bump into potentially other species of some sort? Yes.
Okay.
They're not going to make it to the ship, and the species are, you know, but the universe is dying and will die. And these other planets that they will potentially land on as we go along, though that won't be a major part of the story. If we're not Star Trek, the original says where they're going to land on a planet every episode. The first two issues deals with the planet they land on. As they realize they're not necessarily the last. There's this other group, that other species that was there, but that's the problem as well. Because they're the other part of the conversation, the nihilist species, the ones that are happy that the universe is actually going to die. And that's a different philosophy right there as well.
Mm-hmm. Reminds me of Owlman. I don't know if you ever saw Crisis on Two Earths.
Oh, I certainly have.
Right, James Wood does the voice of Owlman.
Yes, he does.
Spectacularly. I can't spoil the very end, but he makes a sentence he's been saying the whole movie. He says at the very end, it just doesn't matter, and things
right. Unravel. Definitely. Well, the I can't remember the exact quote I used because it shows up in the beginning of the second issue. So I can't remember the exact quote, but basically it stated that the only way for struggling to end is for it to be over. The only because beyond long, soon as long as there's life, there's going to be a struggle for dominance. There's going to be a struggle for food, a struggle for any number of things. The best thing for it, best thing to do at that point then is to not have anything left. That's the only point in time where peace is even possible, is for everything just to be over. So they're actually more than happy. It's sort of like, I kind of view them a little bit of, you ever seen Neverending Story? The movie?
Yeah. Yes, I have.
Okay, there's the nothing, and then there's that wolf guy who works for the nothing because he's kind of part of the philosophy of it, even though he's not necessarily the nothing. He's only going to probably die from it. Right. It's kind of the same concept, which is the rip is sort of like the nothing on that level, and they're more than happy to participate because that's the only way it stops. It's the only way for a species that's predicated, as we almost all are, on dominance and survival and all that. The only way to end all that and have peace is for it all to just stop and for it to just end. So they're more than happy to let the whole universe, to see the whole universe die. And they're not going to be too happy with the species trying to escape. The moment they escape, in their view, the moment those the ship of the Terminus escapes the universe and they were to survive, that means the survival of the fittest, the hunt, the fight for survival continues on, which means you didn't survive. You're not the fittest. And that, once again, it's you lost because you if you had died. So they want them to die, too, because if there's any life that does survive, the struggle then continues. So they want that to end, too.
Okay, now I've got to ask about food. Do they all eat the same food?
I mean, I haven't gone to deep detail in what they all would eat, but the ship is has enough resources, seemingly, for them to make the trip to the edge of the universe. However, as you see in the first issue, there's some definite disagreement on what constitutes enough. And but I mean I don't have like a menu or anything like that, but there is resources on the ship. There would be a like most ideas of a ship with a long-term trip, you're going to have a garden on the ship, that kind of thing. So there is food there, but just because there is food there, it doesn't mean there's going to be enough groups who think that's not enough, you know, worry, and you know, we need more, we can't take a chance, you know, who knows when the next depot is going to show up where there's a planet where there could be resources, things of that nature.
Because the cat people or the animalistic people might see meat as appealing.
Well, yeah, so I mean, they definitely would have they would have some sort of store for food, whether or not it's just frozen meat or is it some sort of some sort of protein replacement or whatever, things of that nature. There's something there. But yeah, I mean, they're a race predicated on hunting and food and being and predatory behavior. They're not going to be satisfied with just what's in the refrigerator, as it were. You know, they do want something new and fresh and something of that nature, which is part of the reason why they're going to have this, they land. But like I said, this is going to go horribly bad for them because, once again, landing on any planet when you're the last species and you're trying to get the hell out of there probably isn't the best move. There's nothing good about an unknown planet.
Because you've got the tree people, and those are plant people, and oftentimes races will eat plants. I don't know if we want to eat trees necessarily, but I'm trying to figure out how, because I could see all this disintegrating.
Well, I mean, like I said, there's a lot of questions on how it could play out. I mean, there's obviously an argument to be made about like a Noah's Ark type situation here. The question is, how the hell did the lion, what did the lions eat? I mean, it's problematic when you think about it in any logical way. And like I said, there's a lot of reasons why at the end of the day, most will not survive. I left the door open on which ones necessarily will survive, though I do have a few that I definitely already have in mind that will. But like I said, there's a lot of reason why there's going to be a lot of death, and the death is not going to come necessarily externally. There's going to be a lot of death from those inside the ship. There's a death, and the second issue ends with a very prominent death as well. There's a lot of things that are going to happen. A lot of blood is going to be shed before this is all over.
Okay. Now the last thing I want to ask, I'll put this gently. Is it possible for the species to interbreed with each other?
I mean, technically, by the definition of species, you say that you would assume the argument is no, because by definition, a species is something that cannot breed successfully with any other animal and have viable offspring. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, probably not. But at the same time, we're looking at a future. Who knows how far in the future? I'd never put a year on how many, you know, years we're talking here. So who knows what they can come up with?
Okay.
But once again, the ending is going to be such that that may not be necessarily the most significant question.
Okay. Okay.
Because so it'd be, good. Yeah, like I said, it's going, I can't give anything away, but like I said, it's going to, the ending is going to be very interesting. So that's all I'm going to say.
Okay. Cause I like stuff that makes me think.
Oh, they're good. Those, actually, you had two questions I actually hadn't considered necessarily. the food question, the thing at all. So I'm kind of just thinking as I go, but, like I said, I don't know the answer necessarily because I haven't thought, I didn't think about that at the moment.
Well, see, I used to watch Deep Space Nine, and the thing that used to always happen to me, I'd watch it on the channel, and the next thing, I'd be thinking about the episode for like 15 minutes after, and suddenly I'd realize, oh, the next TV show is on, and I don't want to watch that, and I'd turn it off, but I had for 15 minutes been thinking about the Deep Space Nine episode, and so I was, you know, I was like, whoops, I didn't really want to have this on. And that's, I like shows that do that to me. I like things that make me think. And I think this is going to be one of those ones where I've only read 10 pages and I'm already going, now what about this? And how does this work with this?
If I did it right, that's going to be the goal. The one thing I hope is not viewed, the story's not viewed as, it's disposable. This is not a disposable series. This isn't a flip through, read, put it away, and then move on to your next comic book. This is a, if I did it right, and it does get done right, it's a story that you're going to think, huh, you know, that's kind of interesting. And you may not necessarily agree with the outcomes and how I approach the certain things, but if you're arguing it, I did the job correctly.
Well, it's the thing I want to do is, and I can, when I get to the end of the story, I can always think, well, that's the way you would have done it, but maybe I might have done things a little differently, but I like I said, stuff that makes me think and consider stuff, I really like, and I really want something that engages my brain. And, you know, many comics I can flip through in 5 minutes and I'm perfectly fine. But I don't want a 5 minute comic. I like the kind that make me stop and read each word balloon and read each thing, because I'd much rather be engaged in the story than just flip. And it looks like your book is going to be the kind that I really like, because I'm going to have to pay attention and think about what's going on. I always like that.
I like I said, that would be the goal. If I can get someone to stop and contemplate what I discussed in any given issue, then I did my job correctly. This is not a comic book. I mean, some people are like, I don't want my comic book to be political or anything like that. Well, my comic book has something to say. I'm saying something through my comic book. It's unapologetic about it. It's there. I'm saying something. Now, it's up to you necessarily to determine what it is I'm saying, which is the point. But this comic book is meant to get you thinking about something and try to figure out what I'm saying. It is a dialogue between me and the reader. At least I believe it is.
Mm-hmm. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's political, you know?
Well, I would argue all art is on some level politics, political on some level.
Okay.
I think you can use a different word that than political necessarily, but all art is an attempt to make a statement about something on any number of issues. And anytime you're trying to say something, you can't use the word political necessarily, but anytime you're trying to say something, you're having a dialogue with a reader that may or may not be cordial. You know, you're not, you know, you're, when, but I think the saying is, whatever you say, you're going to have, the population is going to disagree with you. And this story has a lot to say. And I will wager there'll be a lot of people who are going to be disagreed with the concept. Some of them hopefully still enjoy it, but will disagree. And some of them maybe will even respond back and say, hey, I don't agree with this outcome. I think it would be more like this. And that's fine too. Fantastic.
Well, You know, I mean, Marvel made a big thing out of these What If books, where the stories went a different direction than they did in the comic. And, of course, everything always turned out much worse than they did in the original comic. But the thing to me is I like a story that I sit there and I read and I contemplate and I think, ooh, what if you'd gone this direction? And what about this? And what about these characters? What do they actually mean and stuff like that? And so for me, this is a book I'm going to really enjoy. I think this is going to be a lot of fun because I love thoughtful stuff. I love stuff. And I don't have to agree with it either. I've seen stuff where I flat out say, well, I don't agree with that. But I want to see what the point is you're trying to make. And so I continue on because I want to see that. So I'm looking forward to this. I think this is one of those kind of books that we don't get enough of, in my mind. I mean, I love my Long Johns. Don't get me wrong. I love superheroes, but a lot of the times those are the flip books. Flip, 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 flip.
Yeah.
I don't need to read all those word balloons. I can just look at the pictures and I'm pretty much through. I like stuff that makes me slow down and read it. I have to direct you to a book that's called Claw, K-L-A-W. Okay. And it's a European book. I don't know if you ever heard of it. It's about were people. They turn into different, like were tigers and were buffaloes and were all these like teenagers turn into different were characters. And I was engaged. I loved that book. I got the first three books and I couldn't find the fourth. And I finally found it and I ordered it. And I couldn't get here fast enough for me to read it. It was nothing like what I expected, but I loved it. It was still a great ending to the story. And see, that's the kind of stuff I like. I don't have to, you know, I want to buy it in the sense that I agree that this could happen, but I don't necessarily want to be able to figure out ahead of time. So I'm looking forward to this book. I think this is going to have a lot to say. And people who want to think instead of just flip through it, I think like me, are going to really enjoy it. I think it's a great book.
Thank you. I do appreciate it.
Once again, this project will only be funded if it reaches its goal by Thursday, April 13 at 8:03 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. How many pages are in the first issue?
The first issue is 24 pages.
Okay. Do you have a projected date when this is going to be completed?
I'm hoping to have it in the hands of the backers by the end of July, beginning of August.
Okay, great. Do you have like a in your mind a production schedule as to how soon each issue is going to come out?
It depends a little bit on how well we do. It would be great if we made so much money on this that Brad can focus on this full time. But keep in mind, the guy has a day job. So my guess is that some of it's going to have to do with the speed in which we fund and the speed and the amount we fund that he can, how much he can focus in on doing just this.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a real fun book to read because I love thoughtful stuff. So I think it's going to be great. Now, before we go, we should talk about, and I mentioned at the beginning that you do have, you provide services for people who are trying to publicize their works. And it's, let's see. I don't have the name, but what's the name of the service that you provide?
I call the company Vector Publicity. I'm a publicist.
Okay. So is that Vector Comics or is that Vector Publicity?
Vector Publicity. It's okay. Also the name. I got the name from Vector Comics.
So if somebody wants to take advantage of your services, how do they get a hold of you?
Find me on Twitter, find me on Facebook, find me on Instagram, send me a message. I will say this. I only book usually two or three clients a month. Anything after that, I will reject for reasons. But if you find me, the rule of thumb is you want my services 4 to 6 weeks before you launch. Okay. If you're going to contact me saying I just launched, you're probably not much I'm not going to really do much help for you at that point.
Okay, and your last name is spelled H-A-A-S.
That is correct.
Because some people, spelling and the internet do not go hand in hand, shall we say. Mm. Now, if people want to follow your projects, on the other hand, okay, not this, but your comics and things like that, how do they follow you on social media?
Well, Traversing the Stars is the podcast. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me Traversing the Stars on Twitter. Traversing_the_stars on Instagram. Terminus has a Facebook page on its own. You can just find it under Terminus. You can find me under J House Interviews on Twitter. You can find me under Vector_comics on Instagram. if there's social media, you can find me somewhere. I've hoard myself on just about every platform there is at this point.
So these things are keeping you busy. There's not other projects that we need to be aware of, or
Malik, Raining Devil, the third issue is in production. I just started writing the fifth issue. That one doesn't have a Kickstarter as of yet. I don't know if we'll do one for those issues right now. We're just pumping them up at regular. We did one for the first. But Malik is the other comic I'm working on right now. That's a six issue miniseries that's going to be done hopefully sooner than later.
Okay, very good, very good. And of course, now we know how to keep track of what you're up to. Again, it's on Kickstarter, The End of All, Terminus, and it's described as an apocalyptic science fiction epic about the last seven species in the universe aboard the spaceship Terminus. So you want to be able to get that. Let's be sure to get that and push them over the goal into stretch goals so that we can get good things, maybe even get an issue or two all at the same time, so that you don't have to do Kickstarters. You can actually focus on the creating, which is a lot of people really like. So, well, Jeff, it's great to talk with you. And I'm looking forward to seeing more of this. The 10 pages got me thinking. So I really like a book to think. So I'm gonna make sure I get in there and get this book so I can read it and kind of enjoy the storytelling you're doing on the various levels, because I really like that. So keep it up again. One last time, The End of All, Terminus. It's going to be funded, if it reaches its goal, by Thursday, April 13 at 8:03 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And Jeff, keep it up. I think I'm engaged and I'm fascinated, and I think other people will be too.
Thank you.
So keep up the wonderful stuff.
Yeah, thank you.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol...
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.